Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Gord Miller back in here on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
It is a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. I received some feedback yesterday, last night, from some listeners, friends of mine who were listening to the show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that you were very saucy yesterday. They liked it. They weren't complaining. But the question was, is he always like that?
In which way?
You were spicy. You were.
Well, sometimes you got to bring that in August because there isn't a lot going on. So if you don't kind of,
but there
spice
was a lot
up,
going on. We had a lot going on yesterday, right?
Yeah, I guess there was. Yeah, yeah, there was.
Did coming you watch off the Jays Tiger, and, did you watch the Jays game last night?
I watched a fair amount of that. I mean, it was a cool scene because of Sean Reed Foley, and he's got the hipster look. I loved that.
It wasn't really a cool scene because there was no one there.
Well, there's nobody there because Kansas City is terrible, and the Jays aren't any good either. I think they listed it at 14,000.
It's a big stadium for.
Yeah, Kauffman's a big stadium.
You'd rattle around in there. My shoes almost melted there. I went there with the Jays in 92, about this time of the year, and they had the AstroTurf then. And so I was standing on the field doing sports desk and whatever, and hits in the show, and I thought my shoes were going to melt. It was that hot. AstroTurf was a mess.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Like playing on it was obviously terrible for athletes. Standing on it. Like, they'd water it. They'd put water on it, and the steam would rise up.
You just never see that anymore. Like, AstroTurf, is it anywhere?
No, it doesn't even exist.
I don't think it exists.
So the guys from Montreal invented Field Turf, right?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Field Turf's from Montreal.
Okay.
So it's ground-up tires. Right? Sometimes, like, on fresh Field Turf, you'll see a guy get tackled in football or the ball hit the thing in baseball, and, like, this black stuff, that's ground-up rubber.
It's popped into guys' eyes before in football.
Yeah.
Like you go down and tackle and it pops up and it gets in the eye. It can really freak guys out.
But the old days, like Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, like you'd go down to field level there and it was like warped.
Scary. To think that they were playing football on that where every 15 yards you could just drop into like a volcanic type of.
There was a zipper. There were zippers that attached it.
Yeah.
It was awful.
It's terrible. Like, and there's still some fields in the NFL. Like the one down in Washington is still not very good.
Yeah.
Like remember RG3 blew his knee out a number of years ago there in the playoff game. It was the NFC wildcard game at home, I believe. And he stepped in what was basically just a hole. There was a hole on the field.
Yeah,
and how do you explain that at the NFL level? You are raking in billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah.
How do you not protect your investment by making sure that the field is adequate?
And think about how bad AstroTurf was. I mean, remember Exhibition Stadium, the dome in the early days, how bad that was?
Well, and you hit a rocket, too. Like,
right.
Those guys had stones back then to put their bodies in front of like a real line drive off the AstroTurf and up type of single, double, whatever.
My best friend in high school played in the CFL, and he played in Edmonton, so they had a natural grass field. But playing half the season on AstroTurf, he had spinal fusion surgery when he was 29. Like that stuff was like playing on concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, whose idea was that? Ever. At what point was that a good plan?
Where does the name come from?
Well, Astros, I'm assuming somewhere out of Houston or what?
So
was it NASA that came up with that?
When they built the Astrodome, it had a glass roof because the idea was they'd have a natural grass field. Well, grass doesn't grow indoors. So the grass died, so they came up with this plastic grass, AstroTurf. That's what it's named after. And it spread because all the multipurpose stadiums, right? Like most of the multipurpose stadiums, Philly, Pittsburgh, all those places, the field would get chewed up when the football team played, right? And like the baseball team would come in and the field was gouged up, especially if you played, you know, in the rain or anything like that. So AstroTurf went in and it was everywhere. I mean, there was a time when 2/3 of the stadiums in the NFL had AstroTurf. And Kansas City had AstroTurf in the ballpark in a single purpose stadium.
Right. Well, it was big in baseball, right? Like it's all about what is trending.
Right.
That's what sports always is.
No
exactly.
Maintenance and you know,
it sells,
hops and
people like it, it's the new thing, you're into it, and then quickly it outdates itself. The same thing with the Sky Dome. Like the dome when it opened was an international phenomenon.
Yeah.
But the retractable roof.
Then 5 years later, going, there hasn't been another one built.
And you're like, why did they do this? It's so outdated.
It was the last multi-purpose stadium built.
The Rogers Center.
Yeah, it was the last multi-purpose stadium that was built with the seats on rails for baseball and football to move the configuration. It was the last one built. And
really?
So the Dome opened in 89, and I believe Camden Yards opened in 90 or 91.
Not long after.
So Camden Yards was the first of the HOK stadiums, HOK out of Kansas City, that designed these sort of retro ballparks. Right, so then
outdoors,
old
Wrigley type vibe.
Yeah, looked older, right? So the new Comiskey in Chicago opened, and then along came Camden Yards, Jacobs Field, all these new old look ballparks, and suddenly Chicago Stadium looked dated right away, and the Dome looked dated pretty quick.
At least it's unique. Right, like it is a unique part of the skyline as well.
It is.
Like you can
see it. It's a lousy place.
I can't stand it.
It's a lousy place to watch. If you're on the third or first base, like behind the dugout in the second deck, you're a long way from the field.
Yeah.
Because it's square. It's squarish, right?
And listen, it's like any other stadium. If it's full and there's an atmosphere, it's great.
But
you can enjoy it.
That is true of it. I mean, the LA Coliseum's like that.
You can go anywhere on earth. If you get 50,000 people that are rambunctious and into it, it's going to be
for
cool.
Sure.
But when you get 15,000 and the dome is closed, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
It's awful. There's no way anybody likes it. I don't believe that they actually do. This is a topic that we weren't planning on necessarily getting to, but now that we've stumbled across it, Mark Shapiro is probably lucky in a way that we're so focused on how bad the team is and what's going on with Gibbons that what's happening with the Rogers Center really is not much of a talking point, because that was a big part of the sales pitch. That was my understanding anyway.
They're going to put grass in it.
Here comes a guy from Cleveland that knows how to change a stadium, knows how to update a stadium and revolutionize a stadium. Where's that revolution?
Well,
how has it changed at all?
My understanding is that it would be exceedingly difficult to put a grass field in the stadium now.
The engineering just doesn't add up.
There's four levels of parking under it, right? There's a four-level parkade under it. The drainage would be an issue. That parkade probably needs to be looked at. There's a real issue with parkades of that age because the concrete cracks and water gets into the rebar. And I know this because a guy I know in Alberta, an engineer, does this for a living. So the Westin Hotel in Calgary was basically collapsing onto the parkade. They had to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to get under there and reinforce the parkade driveways, the parkade portion of it, to keep the hotel upright. I'm guessing that the dome's approaching 30 years of age. I'm guessing that rebar is probably getting, a lot of water gets in there, people drive in there with the snow and everything else.
Well, we just saw a couple of weeks ago with that flood, too, right?
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure that hit the basement of the Rogers Center.
Right. So,
it did, into the parking lot.
Yeah, so how you'd have drainage and grass in there would be an open question.
I think I'm hopeful that what they're doing is they're staying quiet and they have a plan for a new stadium in the future.
Who's paying for that?
Well, that's the problem. It's obviously they would be leaning on government because that's what every single owner does, regardless of how much money Rogers has. Why they're going to lean on municipal, provincial, and federal funding, I would assume. And I don't know where the land would be, because you're not going to just demolish the Rogers Center and put up a new stadium over the course of an offseason in the winter in Toronto. That's not going to happen. So do they relocate? Are they going down on the water? I don't know.
There was a proposal when Toronto was bidding for the Olympics to put a stadium down in the Leslie Street Spit area. So east of downtown, south of the Gardner, so where the Red Path Sugar's down there, just east of the Westin Hotel.
Yes,
right. Is it Red Path?
It's Red Path.
Yeah,
it's Sugar Beach, they call it.
Yeah, right down there, to put a stadium down there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Chorus building was built down there.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that.
Well, there's lots of other.
There's a lot of land.
If you go further east and south towards that Leslie Street Spit where that bridge is,
right,
you could build a stadium there.
Yeah, you could. I mean, conceivably, there's a lot of different spots. I'm sure you could find it. I think the Rogers Center is in an ideal spot.
It is.
Because of Union Station.
Public transit, yeah.
Public
sure.
transit, there's parking, there's bars, and there's infrastructure already there. But, that's another conversation that's kind of been lost in the shuffle here, is what's going on with the stadium.
Where they should go? Exhibition Stadium. Oh, wait, that's not
going to happen.
The mistake by the lake?
Not going to happen. Well, it is also a card that they can play if they're going to be bad for a few years. The idea that, hey, we might be building a new stadium and it's kind of a carrot that you can throw to the fans. It's an expensive one. It wouldn't be the first time it's happened, though. Hey, we're this bad. You know how we get people interested in the team again or get people flowing into the stadium? We build a new one.
Right. So years ago, I was an Expo fan growing up, loved the Expos, and I ran into Ronald Corey, the old president of the Montreal Canadiens. I said, you know, there was a huge lottery jackpot. I said, you know, if I won that lottery jackpot, I'd build the Montreal Expos a new stadium. And Ronald said to me, my friend, if you come into this kind of money, call me first. I'll find something better for you to do with it.
Right, exactly. Believe me, they don't want to spend the money.
No.
Nobody wants to spend the money, but can there be dividends
now,
from spending the money?
Now,
sometimes you got to spend to make.
What if it was part of an Olympic bid?
Well, and that's been discussed before. You know, even the World Cup bid, but I don't think you can work that out. Like, I don't know if you can build a baseball stadium that is soccer compatible.
The idea when Toronto bid for the Olympics was a stadium you could use for the NFL.
Right. That was the hope, but that was during the Lywicki Bon Jovi time and era. And
well, it was before that, right? Because Toronto bid for the Olympics in 2001.
Well, I'm talking the most recent discussions where they were kicking tires on that with the Pan Am Games, and then they were in on it. That there was some discussion that maybe
that Bills and Toronto series didn't go very well, did it?
Right, but I don't blame Toronto for that. I've always I've never blamed Toronto or suggested that because it failed, quote unquote, that means that this is an NFL city. I believe that it is an NFL city. I think there's a massive NFL fan base here. It's that the Bills were awful. The tickets were outpriced. It wasn't our team. The Rogers Center sucked to watch a game at. There was no atmosphere. There's a lot of different reasons why it went wrong.
And the problem, too, with the stadium is it's too small.
For a football game, you mean?
For an NFL game.
Yeah.
It would be the smallest stadium in the NFL.
Right. You need 60-plus thousand.
Yeah,
if you can.
Is it 52 for...
You know, it fluctuates. Generally, it's around 48, 49,000, maybe 50 grand. You know, but I don't know. I'm sure they move seats around
for football. More for football.
Probably a little bit more. But one thing that did stick out about watching that game last night, and Sean Reed Foley's going to join us, actually, in the 6 p.m. hour. So we're looking forward to that. He had a decent debut.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the greatest debut in pitching history. It wasn't the worst. It was okay. He looked fine. And he's a future piece for this team. He's got some pretty good stuff. And I like the stash and the sleeves. He's got the hipster thing down. I think I support that. And Danny Jansen with the shades and no gloves at bat. Like, these guys are characters.
When he first came to bat, I was like, what's different? No gloves.
No gloves.
It's like watching Fred Couples play golf.
I can't imagine there's more than 20 guys in baseball that hit without gloves. You think there's more than 20?
I can't say scientifically because
Let's see if we can find that out. Let's see if we can find out how many guys consistently.
Wake up Tyler Hunt in the booth there. Wake him up. Just give him a nudge and see if he's awake. And
they have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah,
there's no way he heard
they're
that.
They're playing canasta in there right now.
Just not if you actually... Do you even know what we're talking about? No, you don't.
No.
Okay. We'll look it up ourselves. All right? We'll find it out in the... or someone can tweet it in.
Because I remember Fred Couples in golf was the only golfer that didn't wear a glove.
Which makes no sense in golf. None.
And Jack Nicklaus never wore a hat, or rarely wore a hat.
Which I kind of support, the old school no hat guy. Now, because of the advertising dollars, you have to wear a hat.
This is a weird thing to say, but it has occurred to me over the years. Like, we lather ourselves in sunscreen, right? Always careful. I've never heard of a golfer or a tennis player getting skin cancer.
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Arnold Palmer, the back of his neck looked like the back of an alligator.
Right.
Like
he had the alligator skin.
I think the skin on the back of his neck was like 3 inches thick.
Yeah.
But it's amazing when you think about it.
But maybe they were loading up on...
But not in the 50s and 60s they were.
Well, but back in the 50s and 60s, they were smoking on the course. They weren't driving around with seatbelts. Everything was different, yet they survived. Now we're just so anal about everything. Yeah. And we got to be concerned about everything. In a lot of ways, it's smart. I'm not saying that we shouldn't take our health into consideration. But I'm a relatively new parent, and I think about how we parent, my wife and I, compared to how my parents would, let alone my grandparents or great-grandparents, how different it is.
Oh, yeah.
But you hover over your kids, and you're concerned about everything. I mean, it just...
My neighbor across
night
the street,
day.
I was walking my daughter to school, and my neighbor, what are you doing that for? I said, well, she's in grade 2. So?
Yeah. I remember growing up in Toronto, like, maybe this is revisionist history, but, like, taking the subway all over the city at a really young age. Like, just me and my buddies, we'd go downtown, skateboard around if we had skateboards or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that happens much anymore. But what I was thinking about last night watching that game is how the rivalry between the Jays and the Royals seemed like such a distant memory.
I know. It's
doesn't it seem fun. like... It's, Like such a distant memory.
Because the guys aren't, you know, Bautista's gone and
all the big guys for both teams are gone. Yeah. You know, they're just they're not there.
That Royals World Series win is really an amazing thing.
Well, and they did so like old school stuff. Like it went against the analytics.
Yeah.
That's what was amazing about that is that like they stole bases, they hit and runs.
They sacrificed.
Yeah. They bunted. They did a lot of different things where you're like, what is Ned Yost up to here? Like, what is he thinking? And he would be ridiculed constantly. Yeah. Yet back-to-back World Series appearances, and they won one.
Yeah, and the thing was, for a long time, the Royals were kind of held up as an example of what was wrong with baseball. Right, they would hold their payroll down to like $70 million. You'd cash your $28 million from network TV. You'd get your revenue sharing because you get 1/5 of the road gate. Right,
mm-hmm.
The Red Sox, the Yankees, the Angels, the other teams would come to your park. So on a nice Saturday afternoon, you'd get some attendance. You'd draw like $1.2 million or whatever, and they'd make money. But they would never have a chance to win. Anytime they got a good pitcher, right? They like Zach Greinke, whoever, they just sold them off.
Yep.
But then all of a sudden, they went from being the poster child for, you know, milking the system to being this team that kind of set the whole thing on its ear.
Well, I'm looking over their roster, and this is back in 2015 when the Jays and the Royals met in the ALCS. And that felt like the best opportunity for the Jays to get through because of the heater that they were on in August and September, and that was after the Price acquisition and the Tulowitzki acquisition. And, you know, the comeback, the momentum coming off the ALDS against the Royals, and we know what happened in Game 5, or the Rangers, I should say, in Game 5 with the bat flip and the seventh inning and all those heroics. Yep. And the Royals were a really good team, but it felt like the Jays could get through that. The next year when they met Cleveland, the Indians just completely shut them down. They couldn't hit. They couldn't generate runs. But you look at that Royals team and even the Jays team back in 2015. This is 3 years ago. 3 years ago, these were, like, the Royals went to the World Series in 14 and 15.
Yeah.
In 1 and 15.
And had young players.
And I'm looking at their roster here, guys who played a lot. Alcides Escobar, Eric Hosmer's gone. Morales is in Toronto. Moustakas is gone. Salvador Perez.
Remember Moustakas was
gone. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah, no, but Moustakas was, he was an unmade bet.
He was a different cat.
Yeah. He played like his hair was on fire.
They were a fun team.
Yeah.
Like, they really were.
And they were, to your point, and they were, like, they stole bases. And that's the fun, like, did you see the comments by Jason Wirth the other day? Wirth said that analytics are ruining baseball.
Yes.
Now, I'm not sure ruining it is the right answer, but stolen bases are exciting. They are. Because does the guy get thrown out? Does he, right?
Absolutely. Like that, those like hit and runs are exciting. Stolen bases are exciting. And we saw one last night, and that was like Jansen.
And Russell Martin getting thrown out of the plate.
Yes. And that was Jansen again. Yeah. He hits a single down, you know, in between short and third, and Martin can't outrun the throw. But those are the most exciting plays in the sport. You know, a play at the plate or, you know, a stolen base, a hit and run.
Because home runs are kind of dull. Like, I mean, it's funny, they all look the same. It's kind of
it depends on the moment, like that grand slam walk up by the Cubs.
Yeah, for sure.
That
but you know, like a 2-run homer just kind of empties the bases and there's that moment. But I guess what I'm saying is first and third, nobody out. That's exciting baseball.
Yes,
right. First and third, nobody out. What's going to happen?
Well, and Wirth, listen, he's a jaded guy because he's not in the game anymore. He should not be disappointed with the game. He got paid a lot of money.
The game doesn't owe him a thing.
Doesn't owe him anything.
Yeah.
And Washington overpaid, and he underperformed, and he got a World Series in Philly. But to suggest, and I'm not sure this is what he was doing. I think he was just venting, and he's not alone in this. There's a lot of people that don't love the focus on the numbers all the time, and I don't love the transition of the game, but I can't dispute the relevance of it and the effectiveness of it. Like, you can't dispute the numbers. You can't, there's just, it's futile. There's no point in sitting there and being like, well, I don't like the shift. You may not, but it works.
It works. And I think the problem I have with it, the only issue I have with it is that when I'm watching a game on television and all I see on the graphic is what a player's war is, what his OPS is, tell me about the player. It gets so statistic driven that tell me about who is he. Where's he from? What's his story?
Well, Trout's the perfect example of that, because Trout is one of the all-time great, if not the greatest,
war
player
of all time
we're ever going to see. Yeah. And when all is said and done, there's a very good chance he's going to have the greatest wins above replacement of all time.
Yeah.
And his numbers are spectacular, and he's a brilliant player, and he's fun to watch, but he's a robot, and he's got the personality of the robot. I don't know anything about him.
Right. So
there's nothing unique. There's nothing different. There's nothing disputable.
If you say to me that Austin Matthews led the NHL in 5-on-5 scoring chances last year, or whatever you want to say, to me, that's not the most interesting thing about Austin Matthews. The most interesting thing about Austin Matthews is he's from Arizona. Like, tell me who these guys are. Don't tell me what their numbers are. And I don't know anyone who has contacted me or contacted TSN and said, could you please put more stats in your broadcast?
I'm sure there are people that would want it. People that are seeking it out. But then
seek it out. There's lots of avenues for you to...
You can find it on your own.
If you want to track players' Corsi ratings during the game, you can do that.
And if you're into numbers, you're going to do that anyway.
And I'm not denying the importance of them. What I'm saying is what I do is not a statistically based thing. What I do is not, as a broadcaster, my job...
You're a storyteller.
At the World Junior, my job is to tell you who these guys are.
Right.
So Dylan Cousins, who played for Canada the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament...
Wayne Hlinka-Gretzky,
which you mocked so badly yesterday.
Well, yesterday? Saucy? Is that
you're spicy? Yeah.
I was spicy.
Spicy. But the story of Dylan Cousins isn't, you know, what he did as a rookie in Lethbridge or how many goals he had. The story is he's from Whitehorse, and there's no one from Yukon Territory has ever played more than 10 games in the NHL.
But another difference too, in terms of baseball and everything else, is there's more speak about intangibles in other sports, and there's more topics that are debatable because there may not be a fact-based number. And what you find in baseball, and what makes it increasingly difficult to talk about in talk radio or just debate with your friends, you know, when I grew up, it was, yeah, this guy hits for power, but he can't defend. Yeah, this guy can do this, that. Now it's very, you know, there's not much of a debate. You know, and the only debate there might be in baseball is how guys perform in the playoffs. But even that, the stats geeks will sit there and say, not a big enough sample size for me to have that take. I can't take a run at Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, but he's been awful in the playoffs. Well, he's only pitched 15 times. That's not enough of a sample size for me to have a take. Well, why can't you have a take? You're watching it. You saw him. He blew up. He got pulled in the third inning.
So my point about this is, who do you think the greatest goal scorer is of all time in the NHL?
Well, I would say Gretzky from the number base.
Okay, so
and because he scored, we watched him score.
Okay. So you can say to me, I think Wayne Gretzky is the greatest goal scorer of all time.
Right,
and you can back it up by saying he's got more goals than anyone else. He's got the most goals in a season.
He's got
the fastest
vision,
50,
blah blah blah,
all that. I can say Phil Esposito led the league in goal scoring 5 straight years. No one's ever done that. Mike Bossy had 9 straight 50 goal years. Rocket Richard had 100 more goals than anyone else when he retired. Bobby Hull led the league in goal scoring 7 times. No one's done that. You can't say to me it's a fact Wayne Gretzky is the greatest goal scorer of all time. You can bolster your argument with numbers, and I support that. You cannot say it's a fact. What we've come into now is people that want to say it's a fact. This guy's better than that guy. There's no such thing.
Well, but that's the thing, though. The stats can end arguments if people are utilizing them and are not willing to open their minds on any other topic of debate or conversation within that realm of the debate. And that's the thing about baseball, is now, because of wins above replacement, which is an all-encompassing stat, there was a time where, again, you'd sit there and be like, oh, I like his bat, but he can't defend. Now it's like, well, actually, if you look at his numbers, he's above average defending. It's like, well, I don't like his arm. Well, if you look at his arm, so there's just no debate anywhere.
So it's all fact-based. So the people would tell you that Derek Jeter's overrated.
Because defensively he wasn't that great, and he didn't hit for power.
Yeah, you tell me you don't want Derek Jeter on your team?
I totally agree with that.
Seriously.
I love Jeter, and I think it's ridiculous to ever undervalue him, but it has happened.
It's like the people that talked about Jonathan Toews, and Toews has slipped somewhat, but Jonathan Toews, you know, 2010 to 2015, as Bruce Boudreau said, if you're evaluating him solely on points, you're missing the point with Toews. You missed the importance of him as a player. You don't understand it. And I mean that. Like, if you're going to sit back and say that you think that Jonathan Toews wasn't one of the 10 best centers or 5 best centers of his, you know, at the time. Like, there wasn't a team in the world that wouldn't put him in their top center spot.
And I understand it from the flip side, where if you're completely ignorant to the numbers or you don't want to accept them, then that's equally as ridiculous.
That's equally ridiculous.
Like that's what gets lost in the shuffle. I'm not sitting here saying that the numbers shouldn't be considered. Of course they should be. But it goes both ways. There is stubbornness on both ends of this aisle where on one end it's like, no, only numbers. I don't care about anything else. I'm not listening to anything else. The calculator says this, so that means that. And then the other side is, well, I don't care about this, and I watch the game. And it's like, well, you're both being silly.
Like I can say as a fact, it was hotter today than it was yesterday. Because it's 28 degrees today and it was 25 degrees. I can say that's a fact.
But here's the thing. You can come back with, well, humidity and actually what time of day were you outside.
Right.
There's always a debate.
But I think the problem when you're evaluating people is you can't evaluate people numerically.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. And that gets lost in the numbers as well.
And
these guys are humans.
The beauty of sports is exactly that.
Yeah. The uncertainty of it all. The unpredictability of it all is...
How did we get started on this?
Your buddy thought I was being a clown yesterday. I think that's how it basically
started. And by the way, Ray Ferraro says that you made a dubious claim at the start of the baseball season.
Which would be what?
That the Jays would have a better record than the Red Sox.
There is not a chance in hell I said that. There's no way. That's fake news. Ray...
Never say fake news.
Well, I'm a proponent of fake news when it suits me.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. If it's... You know, helps me kind of end an argument or a discussion.
Oh, okay.
Then I'm more than willing to use it.
That's good, though. I'm going to make a note of that.
Outside of that, the First Amendment and all that kind of stuff. And I fully support journalistic integrity.
So Ray is chortling because he's a Red Sox fan.
Well, of course he is.
I think he used the word donkey with you.
He might.
I think he said, ask that donkey.
But that's not true. There's no way I came into the season. I thought the Jays, I think I remember saying I thought they'd be mid to high 70s in wins. The Sox, everyone knew the Sox were going to win a ton of games. No way I would have said that the Jays, unless at 12-5 when the Jays started hot, I started getting cocky. Maybe there's a chance that happened. That potentially could have
happened. I might have been wrong there.
I might have been. We have a Sound Wars winner.
Yes.
And we're going to have the man, the myth, the legend, Mac Jameson on.
Are we?
Yes. Excellent. Also known as Jamie Noodles McLennan, because there was a signing in the NHL today.
Yeah.
And I think it might have a ripple effect on the Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll tell you about that next. Pretty cool story out of Cleveland, if you can believe it. We'll tell you about that later in the afternoon.
What do you mean by that? You ripped on St. Louis the other day. But I'm going to call you out on this.
Yeah.
You trashed St. Louis the other day. As being this nondescript, you know, and then we had Steve Sands on from the Golf Channel, and he called it one of the best sports towns in America.
Good for Steve. I never disputed how great of a sports town it might be. What I said is, it's one of many American cities that just happen to exist that don't really have any appeal to me.
What's your beef with Cleveland?
Well, it's Cleveland, for starters, and you talk about it being a sports town. The Browns, the Cavs are going to be awful now. But did you hear about this Bud Light stuff?
Yeah, the fridge.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's a really cool idea. It's a brilliant marketing tool by Bud Light.
Now, they did, well, we have to say what it is now.
Yeah, we should explain it. So they've set it up at numerous bars in and around Cleveland that they put Bud Light fridges loaded with Bud Lights and a lock around it, chain and a lock.
I think it's got an electronic lock.
It might be.
Yeah, and they can unlock it.
And the only way it will unlock is if the Browns actually win.
And they've also said that they will refill the fridge every month in case the beer gets stale. And the off chance the Browns go another, 3 months without winning a game.
They've got to win multiple games this year. They have to. I think they will. I think they're going to win at least 4 or 5. I think so. I mean, I'm not a Tyrod Taylor guy, but he's good enough to win 4 or 5. So,
but the thing with that is, I get what you're saying, but I love when people say, well, this quarterback or this guy's going to make a difference. Like, they only play a third of the time.
Like, the quarterback?
You put Tom Brady in Cleveland?
They win a lot of games.
They're better.
Win 10 games with Tom Brady. Oh, absolutely.
Don't. No,
he can't
play defense.
It doesn't matter. Go look at the first Super Bowl that the Indianapolis Colts won. They were the 32nd ranked defense. Manning was so good with Harrison and Reggie Wayne. I believe Wayne was already on that team. They had Bob Sanders, who eventually got healthy and put up some numbers. They had a bit of a pass rush come the playoffs. But if you've got a good enough quarterback, you can win 10
games
in the NFL.
Having a good quarterback is no guarantee you'll win. Having a bad one is a guarantee you won't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll get to Noodles in 2 minutes.
You know what? I think Mac Jameson goes into the Hall of Fame with Sid Finch. You ever see the fictitious Sports Hall of Fame?
No.
Every year, there's the fictitious Athletes Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. It's awesome.
So Mac Jameson, you got to make a pledge anyway, right?
Yeah, like he should be. Like Crash Davis is in the fictitious Athletes Hall
Absolutely,
of Fame.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, Mac Jameson, he's a famous, he's a legend of Vegas. And he's this year's Sound Wars winner, which I'm not surprised by. I figured this had a real good shot.
Can you tell us the backstory of how this all came together? Like, what happened?
Let's bring in Noodles, and let's see if Noodles remembers as well. Because I think I threw it at him, like, last minute. He came into the studio, and it had to do with O's laziness, basically. It was O complaining about pre-tapes, and we decided to screw him over, and we did. Here is Mac Jameson, a.k.a. Jamie Noodles McLennan. Do you remember that, Noodles?
Is this Brian?
Is this Mac?
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about it. I mean, the funny thing is, you're right. It was O had begged us. We were near the end of the season, and he had begged us for a pre-tape because he said, you know what, you and I were best friends. We're peas and carrots. But he's like, can you get me a meaty pre-tape, a 15-minute pre-tape, so he can have another segment off. So when I came into the studio that day, you were like, okay, let's do something. We'll have a little fun. All I remember is you saying, Brian, like, there's no chance that he's going to listen to the pre-tape. So we better, if we cut it short, we've got to be ready because he may be out of the studio. I think he got up and walked around and was looking at the TVs and stuff. And then came back.
He did. So, he did. Yeah. There's video of it, and I think we recently reposted it up on our Overdrive Twitter account because that was his routine. The second we threw to Mac Jameson, O threw his headphones off, went over, probably had a sandwich, messed around with the TVs, and then he just kind of moseyed on back to his seat just in time. Because you're right, I was thinking when it came to an end of the Mac Jameson clip and us returning to character, or I guess real life, where you were, we were acknowledging that this was Noodles, and if you were listening, you probably knew it anyway. But I was a bit concerned that O was going to be gone, like he was going to go over to the Scarborough Town Center or something, and he was here, so it worked out.
Well, the best part was how rattled he was.
Oh, like, he sounds rattled. Like
we screwed him pretty well. It was a good one. I thought we did a good job.
We had some fun with it, but I think he took it personally. Like he thought it was a personal attack on him, but it pretty much was. I mean, if somebody's begging for a pre-tape at the end of June, he pretty much deserved that, and we gave it to him. Right. We had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was good.
That's why I won the Sound Wars. It got a lot of votes, and a lot of people appreciated that kind of material. And we'll see what we've got in store for 2018, 2019. We might have to bring Mac Jameson back, I guess. I mean,
it may have to be a regular bit, but I mean, as great as Las Vegas was last year, I still think it was maybe more of a one-off. I think, Gord, I don't know where you're at with them, but
yeah.
I think they might
dip for a couple of years here and then really be resurgent. They've got young kids coming. Like, the thing about Vegas is they were kind of built to be good in 4 years, and they might be really, really good in 4 years.
Yeah.
They got Cody Glass, Nick Suzuki. They got a defenseman, Eric Brandstrom, coming, who's going to be like a lowercase Eric Carlson.
Could they still get Carlson? Like, what is the holdup here with
them? They could. The problem they have is they dealt away one of the first-round picks, right, to get Tatar, a second and a third. So it's a first in 2018, a second in 2019. So if you dealt your first-round pick for 2019 away, you'd have no first or second, and you're an expansion team. That's tough.
Yeah.
They could fit them. The other team that could do it is Tampa could do it for this year.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford him after that. Like, they couldn't, he's a free agent at the end of the year. You could take him for 1 year.
Right.
Tampa could do that for 1 year.
Well, and technically, he could stay in Ottawa, but no one seems to believe that's the case yet. Well, here we are in the middle of August.
It's August 14th. He's still there.
Yeah. Like, what's going on here, Noodles?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, you're at a point now where I don't know if it's the negotiations have stunted. Like, there's no news.
No, nothing.
No news is not good news when it comes to this type of stuff. You know, if Eric Carlson was close to signing, I would think the insiders would be kind of throwing it out there saying, hey, we're hearing out of Ottawa this, we're hearing. That's not the case. We're not hearing anything, and it's radio silence. And if you check Eric Carlson's Instagram, he's golfing and enjoying life, so he doesn't look too rattled or too concerned whatsoever. So I think it's not good for the Ottawa Senators. I know they signed some youngsters yesterday, Tkachuk, and it's nice for them to be looking to the future, but I think the writing's on the wall. I mean, I'd like to see Eric Carlson sign there just for, Gordon and I have to do a ton of games. Gordon and I are going to have a lot of conversations and filling on the air if it's going to be a long season in Ottawa.
Well, the Jeff Skinner trade does not bode well for Ottawa. If that's the return for Skinner.
Why do you say that? Like that was...
Well, they didn't get a lot for Skinner. They didn't. I mean, and Skinner's a proven goal scorer in the NHL. I'm just saying, if the return for Skinner was that, then thinking you're going to get a high first round pick, a five star prospect, and a player off the roster is probably asking a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's
they got it. They have to get it though. Like they have
it's
to.
I think it's too late.
I think they might have waited too long as well.
Well, I don't know if they waited too long. Or I just don't know if they got the offers they wanted.
Or the Bobby Ryan scenario is also a part of this too. Is if he's been connected, then that's why you're getting low.
It was close. It was close to Vegas at the deadline. At 2:45 Eastern time at the deadline, it was close to done. I know
really?
That. I know that because Detroit was waiting to hear on Tatar. And Vegas told them that, sit tight, we might have something else. We need the first-round pick for that. That was for Carlson.
Mm. Okay. Well, it didn't come about, and now you're sitting there, and you're going to start the season, and all we're going to be talking about is Eric Carlson's future. I mean, it's good conversation for us in the media and the fans, but, I mean, if you're a diehard Senators fan, you're looking at the roster, you're looking at where they are, and where you think they're going to head. And let's not forget, Matt Duchene is hanging in the wind there, too.
And Mark Stone
at the end of the year. And they don't have a first-round pick in what is being deemed like the deepest draft since the 2003 draft.
Yeah.
Right?
That's concerning.
Jamie, I was west. I was in Kamloops at the World Junior Showcase, and then in Edmonton at the Hlinka-Gretzky Cup.
The Wayne Hlinka-Gretzky.
Yeah. Do you know that Hayes has it in for Gretzky?
No, I kind of do from game 6 in 93.
Has it in for Gretzky.
Well, no, well, now I'm going to refer to him.
He cost the Leafs a cup. That's why the high stick on Dougie Gilmore apparently took him out of he couldn't play hockey after that. And Gretzky, that's why. I mean, it's more Carey Fraser, but ultimately it was the stick of Wayne Gretzky that really irritated the city of Toronto at that point.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. I mean, I'm not alone in that, but
no. But
now he's Wayne Hlinka-Gretzky.
Who he is. At any rate, at those two tournaments, I mean, Jack Hughes for me is a left-handed Pat LaFontaine.
Wow,
he looks like a lefty Pat LaFontaine.
Well, I read McDavid's comments about him this morning, saying how smooth he was, and when you're getting praise from top players, they're noticing. How Austin Matthews got noticed. Everyone was like, "Look at this release! Look at the way he carries himself." People are talking about Hughes. I don't think in the same light as Austin, but still a special player.
I want to get to this Ryan Ellis contract quickly because he signed an extension in Nashville, 8 years, $6.25 million, that will kick in after this upcoming season. And it's a really good deal for him, a good deal for Nashville. He's a really good player. But I wonder what this is going to say about Jake Gardner and his upcoming UFA status, because Ellis is a guy who everyone loves, even though I don't know how much they really watch him. It's just one of those guys that people talk about. Yet in Nashville, he's at best their third defenseman. Like Yossi and Subban are 1-2. At best, he's 3, maybe 4 behind Ekholm, and he's getting that kind of money. I know Gardner's a whipping boy in Toronto, but he's going to get paid, man. He's going to get paid.
He'll get paid, but, I personally think Ellis is a better player than Gardner. I don't know where you stand, and Gord, you watch him a lot. I've seen him a lot. I think Jake Gardner in Toronto, you're right, he gets the short end of the stick. He is what he is. We're always looking at what he's not instead of what he is. I mean, here's a guy who can produce 40 to 50 points every year if you want him and you slot him properly. And it's not – his point production is not going to go down with a very talented Toronto team. If anything, it's going to be – it'll maintain or go up because their power play is not going to get any worse. And moving the puck to more quality forwards, you're going to get points that way. So I think he is going to be able to use that as comparables, But, you know, I like Ellis, and I think Ellis has a lot more jam than – he's just a different type of player. He's got some irritability. He gets involved physically, even though he's not a big guy.
He can really rip it, too. He can really rip it.
Yeah, I'm a big Ellis fan. I have to be honest. I'm a big Ellis fan. Now, they're spending a lot of money on the back end. You know, at some point, you know, are they going to have to move PK's contract? Or are they going to move somebody else to create room so that they have what they would deem maybe a three-headed monster with Yossi, Subban, and Ellis, and maybe have to go on the cheap a little bit lower down? But, you know, ultimately, I think it's a nice move, and it's good value for Ellis, and it's good value for the Predators because, you know, maybe if he made it to unrestricted free agency, a right-handed defenseman who can handle the puck and quarterback a power play and play a lot of minutes on a lot of different teams, he could probably garner a lot more money than that.
He's also an NHL – Jake Gardner is an NHL defenseman, and you can say what you want about him. And to your point, Jamie, you can talk about what he can't do, what he doesn't do well. He's a bona fide National Hockey League defenseman, and replacing him would be very difficult.
For sure.
He'd be a very tough guy. Like, and I know what fans are saying, like, I can't stand him, I don't like him. Fine. Who do you have that's better?
Well, and it's also a conversation that has not been had at any point this year, but we could wake up tomorrow and they'll announce an extension. Like, Ellis did not have to sign today. He's got another year left on his deal.
Yeah.
Same thing. We're so focused on
Nashville
Matthews and Marner and Nylander.
Nashville couldn't start the year without Ellis hanging over them. They were trying to get Ellis done, and the biggest thing they got done was, and this is the sticking point, David Poile doesn't give out no trade or no move clauses. Only one Nashville player has one, Pekka Rinne. And he does not give them out. And he dug in. And so none of their forwards, none of their D have no trade or
That's
no
impressive.
Clauses.
Well, that's the only other GM I know is Ron Hextall, who's done that.
Yep.
Hexy's been able to do that, too. And it you know what? It gives you flexibility. Ultimately, and we all know this in today's game, if you want to trade somebody, you'll find a way to move them. And that's, in, you know, you'll get the player, you talk the agent to talk the player into it. But it just makes it a lot easier if there is no constraints on it that, hey, you know what, for lack of better words and no disrespect, Arizona can be a player, or, you know, whoever else is a Carolina can be a player where can be, you know, in the running for a player that is available where maybe they wouldn't be before if there was a 10-team list. So I think it creates some flexibility for the manager if you're going to move a player out.
All right, Mac, enjoy your last couple of weeks. And I'll get you back in here real
soon. Moving day.
Yes. I can't believe it's August 15th tomorrow.
I know.
Like, where's the summer gone?
It's flying,
I don't know.
Man. Flying.
We're coasting. I can't even imagine what the O-Dog is doing right now. Oh. I have no idea.
I can. I got an idea.
Face down on his pool table.
Yeah, I got an idea. Anyway.
All right, we all do. All right, guys.
There's Mac Jameson, also known as Jamie Noodles McLennan. We'll get back into the Ellis-Gardner comparisons later in the afternoon. The great Doug Flutie at 5:30.
All right, what do you got there, Gordon? So the Fictitious Athletes Hall of Fame, the first inductee was in 2013, Rocky Balboa.
That makes all the sense.
The class of 2014, Crash Davis, Ricky Vaughn, Roy Hobbs from Bull Durham, Major League in the Natural.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Doyle was the contributor, the broadcast, the brilliant broadcaster in Major League.
That's Bob Uecker.
Yeah. 2015, the inductees were Happy Gilmore, Reg Dunlop from Slapshot, the Hanson brothers. The contributors, Carl Spackler, the groundskeeper in Caddyshack, and Mr. Miyagi.
Karate Kid, I like
Karate
it.
Kid. 2016, Fictitious Athletes Hall of Fame, Apollo Creed, Benny Franklin Rodriguez from The Sandlot, Charlie Conway from the Mighty Ducks. The contributors were Chubbs Peterson from Happy Gilmore and Gordon Bombay from the Mighty Ducks. Then last year, Bobby Boucher from The Waterboy, Forrest Gump. Now, you don't buy
that's
Forrest.
Bogus.
It's not.
It's not a sports movie.
He was the tailback at Alabama.
Right.
He ran across the country and he killed it in ping pong in China.
Doesn't matter.
Like, that's a three sport guy.
I don't think of. You never think athlete when you think Forrest Gump. You just don't.
Did you see him play for Alabama?
Yeah, he was unreal.
They couldn't catch him.
But he was a horrible athlete. They just gave him the ball and they said, run straight.
I know, that's fine. He did. He ran across America.
He didn't stop.
He started.
He ran into the tunnel. How can you be in the Hall of Fame if you don't know when to stop?
But he started the jogging craze. And then Willie Mays Hayes. And the contributor was Mickey Goldmill.
The Mick.
Burgess Meredith from Rocky. Cut me, Mick. Cut
like
me, Mick.
That.
You got to be mean.
I love it. Yeah. All right, we'll get back into that because I've got some takes on. The Sandlot one really bothers me. Because if you've seen Sandlot, you realize that that kid, he had a very small role in the movie.
Yeah.
But he was the best player, and he made it to the Dodgers, and he stole home. And anyway, Gordon Miller's in here. Hour two coming up. Doug Flutie will join us at 5:30. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.